If your vibe is the earlier the better, Lowe's early Black Friday deals are a no-brainer. Get up to 35% off select major appliances, and rewards members get free delivery, haul-away, basic installation, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 11/4. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change. LG member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Gold Belly. Gold Belly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Gold Belly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
You can live your whole life inside the same walls and never really know who else is sharing the space with you. For her, the realization crept in quietly. Little noises, half-remembered dreams, that thin, prickling feeling when you know you're not alone, even though you can't explain why. By the time she was 21, she'd accepted that her home wasn't just hers. She'd moved often as a kid. But this townhouse was the place she'd stayed the longest. A narrow two-story rental, worn beige carpet on the stairs, 3 bedrooms and 1 bathroom up top, a living room and kitchen downstairs that always smelled faintly of dryer sheets, no matter what was cooking. She lived there with her mom and her older sister, 6 years her senior, both students too, all of them pooling their money to make it work. The townhouse looked normal enough from the outside, identical to the row beside it, but upstairs the air felt heavier somehow. She couldn't remember a time when it didn't. Her family wasn't the type to shrug off strange things. Her mother called her the little witch baby, half a joke, half a label that stuck. They believed that some people were just open to the other side, thin-skinned in ways science couldn't measure. Relatives told stories at gatherings the way other families swapped recipes, comparing notes about footsteps on stairs, flickering lights, whispers that didn't belong to any living throat. So when the weirdness in the townhouse started, nobody went into denial. They just learned to live with it. The upstairs hallway was the first place she came to dread. The stairs rose straight into it so that the top landing faced her mother's bedroom door. Her sister's room opened directly onto that landing, and her sister always slept with her door wide open, as if daring whatever lingered there to show itself. Her own bedroom was at the opposite end of the hall, beside her sister's. The stretch of carpet between them seemed to carry its own weather, colder at night, prone to creaks and pops even when everyone was in bed. When she was younger, the strangeness showed up in dreams. She'd dream of the hall light switching on by itself, her mother's voice calling out for her to turn it off. The kind of mundane errand a child dreads in the dark. In the dream, she'd hesitate in the doorway of her room, knowing, really knowing, that the moment she stepped into the hallway, something bad was waiting. In the dream, she'd flick the switch off, feel the dark surge toward her like water and wake with her heart hammering. The terror always lingered after waking, thick enough that she'd sit up in bed and turn her own lamp on just to prove she could. That was when the floorboards outside her room would start to pop, soft but deliberate, as though someone or something had been standing there all along. Even in daylight, the townhouse liked to remind them it wasn't empty. The stereo in the living room would click on by itself and crank the volume to full blast, sometimes brand new stereos that couldn't be blamed on bad wiring. Her guitar amp once roared to life mid-song, the dial spinning upward as if an unseen hand wanted to drown her out. The TV in the corner turned on and off at will, sometimes while all three of them sat watching. She got used to flashes of light, bright white orbs that darted across a room like dragonflies, and once, something black streaked just over her head and landed behind her with a thud she could hear, but not trace. When she turned, nothing was there. Her mom had a theory. Some spirits just passed through like travelers, while others planted roots. That idea eventually started to feel like fact. The passers-through came and went in ways that were sometimes startling, sometimes oddly gentle. She remembers one winter night when she was 10 or 11, her sister still in high school, both of them curled up on opposite couches in the living room, the TV flickering bluish light on the walls. Out of nowhere, she caught a whiff of lilacs. Not a faint trace, but a heady, summer-rich bloom of scent that carried with it the suggestion of a cool breeze, which was impossible. Every window was locked against the snow outside, and the furnace certainly didn't smell that sweet. She asked her sister if she smelled it. Her sister frowned and shook her head. A few seconds later, her sister jerked upright and said, "Wait, yeah, I smell it now." The scent had drifted across the room to her side. They laughed nervously about a perfume-wearing ghost and went back to the show. Then a different smell rolled past her, rank, damp, the unmistakable sour, rot stench of something spoiled. She kept quiet until her sister's nose wrinkled and she said she smelled it too. A few beats later, a small ball of light zipped across the room and vanished into the hallway. Neither of them laughed after that. There were other passers-by over the years. In high school, she was once alone on the family computer in the living room when a wave of confusion and panic pressed down on her like a change in air pressure. She turned her head and saw a teenage boy sitting cross-legged on the carpet beside her chair. He looked up at her with the kind of raw sadness that makes your chest ache even when you don't know why. She didn't want to find out who he was staring straight ahead at the monitor. She said aloud, politely, that he should go, then bolted upstairs to tell her mother. She never saw him again. Her mother had her own ongoing battle with a different set of visitors. Huge black dogs, she swore, lurked in the basement. Once, after too many unnerving nights, her mother and aunt performed some kind of quiet ritual down there. Whatever they did worked. The dogs never came back. But not everything in the townhouse was transient. Some things stayed. Some things had favorite spots. Not all the presences were fleeting. Some lingered like permanent house guests, uninvited, but stubbornly part of the place. She came to know them by how they felt before she ever saw them. The first was almost gentle. She never knew his name, but in her head, she thought of him as the quiet guardian. He appeared most often as she was settling into bed at night, when the house was still and the air outside her window hummed with passing cars on the distant street. She would feel his arrival before she could glimpse him, an icy coolness on her cheeks or lips, as if winter air had slipped under her skin and was cooling her from the inside out. Sometimes the sensation brushed across her hands while she read, tender and deliberate, but never frightening. When she finally caught sight of him, just fragments at first, he was tall, dark-haired, a young native man in his mid-twenties, with hair that fell long over his shoulders. He carried a dignity that made her feel unafraid. She didn't mind his presence. On certain nights, it even felt as though he was keeping the worst things at bay. The second spirit was harder to accept, an old woman who seemed to belong to the house as much as the walls and pipes. She was never warm, never welcoming. The first time she heard the woman's voice, it came right against her ear while she was alone in the basement, practicing dance steps on the cool concrete. The whisper was sharp and intimate enough to raise the hair on her arms. A few nights later, while she was strumming her guitar upstairs, that same whisper brushed past her again, this time saying, "That's nice." It wasn't the words that chilled her so much as the breath of someone unseen standing far too close. The third presence, if it was even separate from the old woman, was something darker altogether. Sometimes it felt like a man. Other times like neither man nor woman at all. A formless ill will that pooled at the top of the staircase near her mother's door. If she left her bedroom door cracked at night, she could swear she saw movement in the hallway, shadows shifting just outside her line of sight. She had to keep the door open for her aging cat, but that small strip of open darkness became a nightly test of courage. Even her sister admitted that the top of the stairs never felt empty. There were two encounters that convinced her the darker thing wasn't just imagination. The first happened during a stretch when her cat refused to sleep in her room. Usually the animal curled up by her feet every night, but for an entire week the cat bolted the moment she tried to carry it inside, sometimes yowling at a corner she herself saw nothing in. That week her sleep turned ragged, broken by nightmares that left her throat dry and her skin clammy, each dream steeped in the same mischievous malice she'd begun to recognize. One night, she woke to the sound of something shuffling across her carpet. She stayed rigid, not daring to sit up. When the noise moved closer, she forced herself upright and spotted a shape in the dark she thought was her cat, but the shape slid silently into the wall and disappeared. Heart pounding, she lay back down, only for the shuffling to return. Deciding she couldn't take it, she swung her legs off the bed to head to her mother's room for the night, only to hear slow, deliberate breathing right beside her. She stumbled forward, and her shin struck something solid, something that shouldn't have been there. She assumed she'd bumped her small IKEA stool, except that the stool's usual place was across the room. Whatever she'd collided with had been dense enough to hurt. Overwhelmed to the point of tears, she woke her mother and said it was unbearable in there. Her mother told her to sleep wherever she felt safest. After pacing the hallway to calm herself, she decided to brave it, returned to her room, switched on the light, and felt that same oppressive rush engulf her again. That was when she realized the stool hadn't been moved at all. Whatever she'd struck with her leg had been something else. The second event happened about 6 months later, after she'd been staying most nights at her boyfriend's apartment. Coming home after nearly a week away, she noticed her bedroom felt different, stale, almost resentful. She tried to tidy up, thinking maybe a good cleaning would shake off the unease. Her cat refused to even perch on the bed, tail lashing in agitation. Shrugging it off as feline attitude, she went to sleep. That night, she dreamt she was sitting on the edge of her bed playing her bass guitar in the dark. The dream's perspective wasn't her own. It was as if something stood just behind her shoulder, watching her fascinated. In the dream, she sensed it was about to flick the light switch off and crank the amp volume until it screamed. She jolted awake, unsettled, but tried to dismiss it as just a nightmare. She was drifting off again when she felt the distinct weight of footsteps pressing into the blankets at the foot of the bed. Relieved at first, she assumed it was her cat returning at last. She sat up to pet her, only to find nothing there. She stared for nearly 3 minutes at the indentation forming in the blanket as the invisible steps crept closer up the mattress toward her thighs. That was as much as she could take. She bolted to her mother's room and refused to sleep in her own bed for a week. When she finally did return, after her boyfriend and mother coaxed her, she spent an entire day deep cleaning and rearranging everything. A ritual she'd learned often calmed the activity. Disorder, she'd noticed, seemed to excite whatever shared the house. Sure enough, once the room was neat again, the air lightened, her cat reclaimed its usual spot, and for a while she could almost believe things were back to normal. But peace in that house never lasted for long. For a few blessed weeks, the townhouse stayed quiet. No knocks, no whispers, no cold hand grazing her cheek. She almost let herself believe the cleaning had worked, that the house had finally exhaled whatever restless thing haunted its corners. Then the cycle began again, slowly at first, then all at once. At night, she would wake to the slam of her bedroom door, even though she never latched it. Sometimes she'd be brushing her teeth in the bathroom and the door would creak open a few inches as if nudged by an invisible fingertip. She glanced toward the hallway, find no one there, then reached to close it, only to feel it yank out of her hand and slam shut with such force the frame rattled. It happened so often that the sound of a door swinging on its own stopped startling her and started grinding at her nerves like a constant low-grade threat. The knocking came next, a soft, polite tapping at first, three raps, patient, as if some unseen caller was simply waiting to be invited inside. She'd open the door to find the hallway empty, but at night the tone shifted. The knocks turned into heavy bangs against the wood, sometimes hard enough to make the door shudder in its hinges. Her mother had it happen once while locked in the bathroom, persistent knocking that fell silent the second she opened the door. It was the kind of thing that wore a person down slowly. Never proof enough to call the police, never gentle enough to ignore. She thought perhaps a weekend at her boyfriend's would reset her nerves. Instead, it followed her. That first night away, she dreamt she was in a small, dimly lit washroom, staring at a figure lying in the bathtub. She couldn't move, couldn't breathe. In the dream, she screamed for her mother. Her mother came running in, shoved her aside, and yelled for her to get out, just as a young girl sprang up from the tub and bolted toward her, vanishing straight into the wall. She jerked awake, heart pounding, and tried to nestle closer to the warm bulk of her boyfriend beside her. Then she felt it, something shifting across her legs beneath the covers. Half asleep, she reached out automatically, expecting her cat. But the thought stopped her. Her cat was at home. She sat up and in the faint glow from the streetlight outside the window, saw a blot of darkness writhing near the foot of the bed. No larger than a crouched person, but unmistakably not human. Her breath hitched in her throat. All she could think to do was thrash her legs and nudge her boyfriend awake. He groggily pulled her into his arms until the shadow melted back into the dark. She never told him exactly what she saw. Back at the townhouse, the activity only grew bolder, and now it seemed aimed squarely at her. The stereo and computer would pop and thump as though struck by an unseen fist. She would hear measured footsteps circling her bed at night. The knocking on her bedroom door became routine. Once, as she sat at her computer near the closet, a canvas shopping bag leapt off the top shelf, clearing two stacked boxes, and slapped her across the face before dropping to the floor. She searched for any rational explanation and found none. The worst night came after a stretch of brutal insomnia. She'd lain awake for hours, finally drifted into a shallow dream, then surfaced again half awake, unable to move. A weight pressed her chest. She felt the old familiar creep of sleep paralysis, but this time there was more. A man's shape sprawled across her torso, face level with hers. His features were unclear, just a darkness heavier than the surrounding dark, but she felt his presence the way she'd feel the closeness of a living person leaning over her. She squeezed her eyes shut, willing herself to wake fully. When the paralysis broke, she bolted upright, gulping air, only to see the figure still there, suspended a heartbeat longer before it shot backward and vanished out through the doorway. She stayed sitting up in the glow of her bedside lamp until dawn, cross-clutched tight in her fists. Even in daylight, she couldn't shake the feeling she was being singled out. Her mother and sister admitted they sensed it too, that whatever lingered in the house seemed to favor her bedroom, her moods. She suspected her own emotions, raw and unsteady after a recent breakup, were drawing it in. She started sleeping with the small wooden cross her mother had given her, looped around her neck or clutched between her palms. On the nights she held it, she slept deeper, her dreams muted and colorless, as if the cross dulled the static between her and the unseen. But the knocks never truly stopped. The doors still moved. The shadow sometimes lingered at the edges of her vision when grief or exhaustion cracked her guard. What unsettled her most was the sense that the house itself was watching, waiting for the moment her resolve faltered. She had grown up in a family that accepted such things as part of life, but as she turned 21 and the disturbances turned personal, the line between superstition and realities began to blur in ways that left her hollow-eyed and wary of the night. That was the story she finally decided to tell, part confession, part chronicle of the house that would not let her sleep in peace. Even now, with the cross cool against her palm, she couldn't say whether the things that haunted the hallway were passing spirits or something rooted deep in the bones of the townhouse itself. She only knew the knocking would come again, polite at first, until dark.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.